Chapter 20. You've been entirely too quiet today, Castile pointed out again, several hours into the ride to Spessa's end. Have I? I asked, knowing full well there was no point denying it. The back of my neck tightened. Conversation had hummed all around me. Jokes had been shared. Playful insults were often traded. And while Castile was their prince, his status did not give him immunity. Few questions and comments had been directed at me, mostly about my training and how I was able to keep it hidden. Other than explaining how I trained with Victor, I remained silent. There was less opportunity for me to mess up that way.
You have, he said.
Aware of how close Delano and Nail were, riding only a few paces behind us, I said, I've been caught up in the scenery.
The scenery, he repeated. You've been engrossed in staring at trees.
My brow creased as I nodded. Tall pines crowded the road to Spessa's end, growing so close to one another their branches stretched from tree to tree. Very little could be seen beyond them.
I had no idea you were so invested in the common evergreen.
The corners of my lips turned down as I stiffened, pulling away from where I'd been leaning into Castile.
I would think you'd be grateful that I'm quiet. Why in the world would you think I'd be grateful for that?
I sent him an arched brow over my shoulder.
Really?
I drawled in a low voice. His eyes narrowed as I returned to staring at the snow-topped pines. He nudged Seti forward. The large horse responded at once, drawing ahead of the group.
What's really going on with you?
He asked, his voice low.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I lifted my head at the flutter of wings. A bird larger than I'd ever seen took flight from the top of one of the pines, soaring gracefully into the sky. The wingspan was enormous, at least several feet.
Good gods, what kind of bird is that?
I do believe it's a silverhawk. They're known to snatch small animals and even children if they're hungry enough.
My eyes widened. I'd heard stories about birds that could pick up children, but I thought they were just tales.
I'm sure many things in these woods are the subject of such tales, but there is only one tale I'm interested in hearing.
Using his arm around my waist to tug me back against him, his voice was just above my ear as he added,
And that's why you're suddenly as quiet as a ghost. Do you need to hold me this tightly to ask that question?
I snapped. He chuckled.
There she is, my princess.
I've been here this whole time, and I'm not your princess.
Technically, you are my princess, and no, you haven't been here the whole time, he replied. The Poppy I know isn't quiet and meek, at least not the one without the veil. I stared ahead mutinously as his observation struck too close to home for comfort. And this Poppy, the one who says nothing, only showed up this morning, he went on. You say it's not because you chose to be the one who ended that bastard Ascended's life.
I know you well enough to believe that.
I don't know why you think you know me so well, I retorted, even though he did know more about me than anyone, including Victor, Tawny, and my brother.
I know you did what you felt was right, and that is the end of that. You're not one to wallow in your choices, he said.
And he was right.
Ugh. You said it wasn't because of last night, and I'm inclined to believe that to be the truth.
If I said I didn't care what you believe, would it make a difference and force you to be quiet?
No.
I sighed.
I'm a wagering sort of man. So, I'm willing to bet it has everything to do with our understanding.
Irritation flared hotly. Why did he have to be so observant? It was annoying.
So, instead of telling me nothing is wrong, I'm hoping you'll be honest with me. I'm hoping that hawk returns and instead of snatching up poor helpless animals and children, it grabs you.
Castile laughed, the sound rumbling through me.
I knew if I turned around, I would see the hint of fangs and those damn dimples.
I fear that your hopes will go unanswered.
As per usual, I muttered. He ignored that.
I'm not going to let this go, and you of all people should know that I'm persistent when I want something.
A shiver curled down my spine, and the hand that had ended up between the folds of my cloak at some point during the journey slid from my hip to my stomach. Swallowing hard, I ordered myself to think of anything that didn't involve his hand and how low it sat on my belly.
Talk to me, Poppy, he whispered, near my ear as his fingers began to move.
Every cell in my body seemed to focus on those digits.
Please.
Please. The soft request caught me off guard. It was so rare to hear that word pass his lips, even before his identity had been revealed. I gave a small shake of my head. I don't know how to act. He angled his head so he could look at me.
What do you mean?
His fingers were still moving, tracing circles that swept above my navel and then below. My face felt hot, and I wasn't sure if it was due to embarrassment or the slow, lazy pace of his movements, which reminded me too much of those dark early morning hours. I don't know how I'm supposed to behave in a way that will convince others that we're together. His fingers halted for a heartbeat and then started moving once more.
You just need to be yourself, Poppy.
That sounded easier said than done. Being myself would likely mean arguing with you constantly.
And threatening to stab me, he interjected. I know.
And how is me threatening to stab you going to convince anyone that this engagement is real?
I admit, that would lead the average person to believe there were no fond feelings between us. But no one would believe that I would choose a submissive maiden over my brother. They'd expect me to fall for someone as fiery as she is kind, brave, even to a fault, someone who pushes back.
His fingers now moved up and down in a straight line, but for once his words were far more distracting.
They'd expect someone like you, to be honest, not the veiled maiden.
That is not who you are. Unsettled by what he'd said, my grip tightened on the pommel. You're right, I'm not the veiled maiden, not anymore. But I... My gaze lifted to the strip of gray sky. It's what I'm used to, I guess. I'm not used to this.
I imagine you're not used to any of this, and I don't mean the whole being kidnapped part.
A wry grin twisted my lips. All of this is new. The lack of the veil and being allowed to speak whenever I want, to whomever I want, or being able to use my abilities and not hide them. I can't even remember the last time I ate supper at a table with more than just one or two people. I'm not used to being in a room full of individuals, being the center of attention, yet somehow still invisible to them. I trailed off before I admitted what had found its way to the surface. I wasn't sure if even I knew who I was without the veil and all its limitations. Because even though there were still rules, new ones to follow, this was unlike anything before. I guess what I was like as the maiden...
What you were forced to be like as the maiden, he corrected softly.
I nodded. I guess it's what I'm comfortable with when I don't know what's expected of me. And silence, docility, was always expected.
But was it easy?
The sweep of his fingers drifting even lower snagged my attention, sending a flash of molten heat through me and causing me to wonder if I had the foresight to set boundaries with this whole agreement. Surely what he was doing with his hand wouldn't convince anyone of our relationship, since it was hidden beneath the cloak.
Princess,
he murmured, his lips grazing my ear.
I exhaled shakily, hoping that what Kieran had said about Castile and a wolven's ability to scent desire was grossly exaggerated. I often wanted to scream, just scream for no good reason in the middle of the Great Hall during the city council meetings. I would have loved to have screamed right in Priestess Analia's face. He barked out a short, rough laugh.
I would have expected a far more violent desire when it came to that bitch. And I still don't use that word very often, yet I use it proudly when it comes to her.
I grinned, feeling a savage joy at seeing the priestess's eyes widen when Hawk had put her in her place. And I hated just standing there and listening to the Duke get upset because I didn't walk quietly enough.
He seriously lectured you about that?
Yes, I laughed, but there was nothing funny about any of this. He'd lecture me about anything, find any reason for a lesson. Not standing straight enough, being too quiet, not speaking quickly enough when spoken to. When I was allowed to respond, which was ever-changing, I shook my head. I wanted to scream in his face. No, that's not true. I wanted to punch him, often, with my fists. I paused. With a dagger. Castile was silent for a moment. How did you deal with him? That's something I can't wrap my head around. You're not weak. You're not a pushover. That's inherently the opposite of who you are. How did you never push back? I stiffened, feeling shame creep in. I couldn't.
I know that, he immediately reassured. I didn't mean to suggest that you could have.
You were trapped, just like I was, and if anyone thinks you should have, then they've never been in a position where they had to do anything to survive. I relaxed a little. It took a couple of times for me to learn how to disassociate from it. I would be there, but I would think of something, anything else. Sometimes I thought about all the ways I would one day pay him back for every foul thing he did or said. Other times I imagined training with Victor. When it was too hard to focus, I just counted. I would count as high as I could. He seemed to have stopped breathing.
I'm glad I killed him.
Me too. I cleared my throat. Anyway, it wasn't always easy, but sometimes it was easier to just do what they wanted, to be what they expected. I know that sounds terrible. Maybe. To those who've never survived a cane to the skin for no reason. His voice had hardened. We all do what we need to survive. I did countless things I never thought I would do, he admitted freely, without an ounce of shame. And I envied that. But our situations were different. His was a matter of survival, life and death. Mine was not that. But I think choosing the easier path is why I ignored my suspicions about the Ascended, or at least it helped to dismiss them.
I don't think you were alone in choosing that path. I'm sure many others in Solis have shared your suspicions, but it was easier to look past them, even if that meant suffering or sacrifice.
I nodded. Because the alternative would be the upending of everything you believe to be true. And not only that, it comes with the realization of the part you played. At least for me, it does. I was toted out to the people, put on display to remind everyone that the gods could choose anyone, that they too could be blessed one day. And I always knew I wasn't chosen. I whispered the last part, my chest heavy. But I went along with it, and the whole time they were stealing children to feed on, taking good people and turning them into monsters. The easier choice I made too often didn't make me a part of the problem. Castile said nothing, but his fingers still moved idly. It made me a part of the system that bound an entire kingdom in chains, created of fear and false beliefs. I turned my cheek toward him. You know that's true.
Yes.
His breath danced along the corner of my lips.
It is true.
I lowered my gaze to the hardened soil of the road.
But you know what else is true?
Right now, you are destroying an intricate section of the system that has chained an entire kingdom for hundreds of years, he added. You should never forget that you were once an accessory. But you also shouldn't forget what you are now a part of. I looked forward at the narrow road ahead and the snow-heavy needles. But does the present really make amends for the past? Castile didn't answer immediately.
Who is the judge of that? The gods? They sleep.
Society? How can they make decisions unbiasedly when they are prejudiced by their own sins? He questioned, and I had no answer. Let me ask you this. Do you blame Victor? I frowned. For what? He was like a father to you, Poppy. He had to know how much you struggled with the whole maiden thing. Even if he didn't realize how much you struggled, he had to have seen it. The last conversation I'd had with Victor, right before the attack at the right, had been about how I truly felt being the maiden. And he knew what the Duke was doing to you, didn't he? But he didn't stop it, he added quietly. I craned my head to the side. What could he have done? If he spoke one word or intervened, he would have been fired and ostracized, and that is a fate close to a death sentence. Or he would have been killed, and then I wouldn't have been trained. I never would have learned how to defend myself. Victor did everything he could, I defended vehemently, just like my mother and father did the night they were killed. But one could argue that the right thing would have been to intervene, to stop the Duke from hurting you, he said. And I know I'm not one to talk about doing the right thing, but he could have chosen the more difficult path. Either way, you don't hold it against him. And if you did, you've forgiven him, right? Heart aching, I faced forward. There was nothing to forgive, but he... You heard what he said to me before he died. He apologized for failing you, Castile confirmed. Tears burned the backs of my eyes. His last words ever spoken were brutal. I hadn't regretted what I'd said to him before the attack, but now? Now I wished I hadn't spoken so freely. I would do anything for Victor to have died feeling as if he'd done right by me. And he had done just that to the best of his ability. He was the reason I could hold a sword and fire an arrow, fight with my hands and my mind. I think Victor knew that you never held his inaction against him, but whether or not he believed he'd done all that he could was up to him. Castile continued softly. I think it comes down to whether you can make amends with yourself. I saw the point he was making. But I didn't know if anything I did from this moment on would be enough to erase being a silent party to the Ascended. In the meantime, while you try to figure out if you can make amends with yourself, it helps to find someone to blame. And in your case, and Victor's, blame can be shared. With the Ascended? I surmised. Do you not agree? The Ascended created the system Victor and I and everyone else became a part of, unintentionally reinforced, and ultimately became victims of in different ways. My mother hadn't been able to defend herself or me because of the limitations the Ascended placed upon women. Families handed over their children to the court or to the temples because the Ascended taught them it was the only way to appease the gods, and then used the very monsters they created to reinforce those fears. Mr. Tullis made the choice to shove a knife deep inside me, but the kingdom the Ascended created was what drove him to do that. Victor could never speak against the Duke without repercussions. That would have either had him removed from my life completely or ended his. And I had my freedom stripped from me and was kept so sheltered that I could turn to no one with my suspicions. And the Queen, she who cared for me so tenderly, was the foundation of that system. There was no denying that, nor was there any denying that the system would only strengthen and grow unless access to the Atlanteans was cut off. Even without the ability to make more ascended, they would still be strong if they remained in control, if Castile's father did not go to war against them. But war was never one-sided. Casualties always piled up on both sides, and the losses were always the greatest among the most innocent. Many of those who would be free if Atlantia went to war with Solas would die before they even realized how much they'd been chained. Yes, they are to blame, I said finally, raggedly. I had no idea how we strayed so far off topic. Brushing a stray piece of hair back from my face, I cleared my throat. So, there is your answer to why I've been quiet. If I'd known that insulting and threatening you would convince others of our agreement, I would have pulled a knife on you this morning in the banquet hall.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, he said, squeezing me. But if I may make a suggestion,
I would stop calling our engagement an agreement or understanding. That sounds entirely too businesslike, as if we're discussing the trade of milk cows. But isn't that what this is? I would say that what we have is a very intimate agreement. So, no. What we have is simply an impersonal agreement and nothing more.
Impersonal? Is that so?
His hand drifted lower over the flap of buttons on my pants. My breath hitched.
Yes.
Truly?
Yes,
I hissed. Interesting. It didn't seem impersonal last night, he murmured, and then caught the lobe of my ear between his teeth. I gasped, my eyes wide as the little nip set fire to my blood. Slowly freeing the sensitive flesh, he chuckled as his lips touched the space behind my ear, and then I felt the indecent thrill of his sharp teeth dragging over the skin of my throat. For a moment, all thoughts scattered. My boiling blood roared in my ears, through my body, tightening my breasts and settling between my legs, where his fingers ventured dangerously close. They made those tiny circles that tugged at the seam of my pants, rubbing it against my very center. My back arched without thought, and a hidden, reckless part of me wished I could will those fingers lower.
And now? He repeated. Sure doesn't feel impersonal.
I reacted without thought, slamming my elbow into his stomach. Castile grunted out a curse.
Please don't fight atop the horse,
Delano called out from somewhere behind us.
None of us wish to watch Seti trample either of you. Speak for yourself,
came Kieran's droll voice. Castile straightened behind me.
Don't worry, neither of us will fall. It was just a love tap. That did not look like a love tap,
Nail commented.
That's because it was a very passionate one, Castile replied.
You're about to get a love tap to your face, I muttered under my breath. Castile curled his arm more firmly around my waist as he laughed.
There's the vicious little creature I missed.
Whatever, I grumbled. He leaned into me, lowering his voice once more. Back to the original subject at hand. Our engagement is far more believable when you're hitting me than when you're standing by quietly. My brows snapped together. That sounds like a very dysfunctional engagement. You can't spell dysfunctional without fun now, can you? That, I don't even know what to say to that. My point is that you just need to be yourself, princess. Couples argue, they fight. Most don't go around stabbing or punching the other. Most don't start off being lied to or kidnapped, I interrupted. True, which has led to the stabbing and punching, but people who are in love enough to marry, the ones that people know are together before they even realize it, never consist of just one person, one personality, or one will. They fight, they argue, they disagree, they make up, they talk, they agree. The thing they never are is perfect. Are you telling me that the key for us is to fight and make up? I asked. Because there was no way one could look at us, see the way we behaved toward each other, and think we were madly in love. They probably thought we were insane. What I'm telling you is that there is no one way anyone behaves in a relationship. There isn't a textbook of things to do or how to behave, with the exception of the stabbing. I take back my fun and dysfunctional statement. Thank the gods. I just want to make sure you understand that. So when you're free and if you decide to leave. If? You mean when I leave? Yes, my apologies, he demurred. When you leave and go out into the world and find yourself a mate who has never lied or kidnapped me or kidnapped you, there should be no stabbing or punching, only kisses and promises upheld until dying breaths and beyond, he said. That is what you deserve from who you choose to love. I didn't know what to make of that, of him speaking of me loving someone else, loving someone for real. Acid pooled in my stomach. The thing is, you won't mess up if you get mad. You won't do the wrong thing. Each couple is different. Some spend their time whispering sweet words in each other's ears. Some spend the time baiting one another, both enjoying being the tiger in the cat and mouse chase. That is us, he said, or who we appear to others. This won't be hard, not with the passion between us. And before you try to lie and say there is none, just know that it would provoke me into proving I'm right. The last thing I needed was for him to prove that he was right. There was passion between us, whether it was right or wrong, and I supposed it would be far harder to do this if we couldn't physically bear one another's touch. And what he said made too much sense. Not the nonsense about us both being the cat in the cat and mouse chase, which made no sense whatsoever. However, the part about there being no textbook to follow, no guidelines, did make sense. So much so, it felt like something I should have known. You probably think I'm foolish for not knowing.
I don't think you're foolish. I never have. Well, I take that back. I thought you were pretty foolish when you tried to escape,
he said, and my eyes rolled. You've never been in a relationship, and you really haven't been around many normal ones, so I understand why you wouldn't be sure how to act.
And it's not like this is a normal situation.
Feeling a little better, I relaxed some. And you've been in a relationship. I mean, you said you've been in love before.
I have.
I watched the snow slip from branches as we passed, thinking of Alistair's daughter, Shay. That was such a beautiful name, and maybe since Castile had shared things with me before, he would be willing to talk about her. What happened? His fingers stilled, and he was quiet for so long that I didn't think he'd answer, which made me all the more curious. But then he spoke.
She's gone.
Even though I already knew that, I felt a piercing ache in my heart, and I opened myself to him without giving it much thought.
The moment I connected with him, I was hit by a wave of anguish so potent that it almost shielded the thread of anger underneath. I'd been right. Castile's pain and sadness wasn't just for his brother. It was also for this faceless woman. I thought about what Castile had told me the night of the rite, before the attack. He'd taken me to the willow in the gardens, and he'd told me about a place he used to go with his brother and his best friend, a cavern they had turned into their own private world. He said that he'd lost his brother and then his best friend a few years later. Could that best friend have been Shay, this woman he loved? But his pain. Before I even knew what I was doing, I'd let go of the saddle and started to remove my glove.
"Don't,"
he warned softly, and my hands froze.
"I appreciate the gesture, but I don't need you to take away my pain, nor do I want that."
Still connected to him, I couldn't imagine how that was possible. The agony that waited beneath the smirks and the teasing glances, under all his masks, was nearly unbearable. It threatened to drag me to the frozen ground. Being trampled by Seti was almost preferable to what festered from the wounds that couldn't be seen. "Why wouldn't you want that?"
"Because the pain is a reminder and a warning, one I plan never to forget."
I severed the connection as nausea threatened to creep up my throat.
Did she die because of the Ascended?
"Everything that has rotted my life has been tied to the Ascended," he said, his hand returning to my hip.
"I'm tied to the Ascended," I said, before I could stop myself, before I could ignore the strange stinging. Castile didn't respond. He didn't say anything. Seconds ticked by and turned into minutes, and it felt as if there was a band tightening around my chest. Staring straight ahead, I spent the next however many hours wondering how he could stand to even be near me, so close to someone tied to the Ascended as I was. They took his brother. They took the person he loved. They took his freedom. What else could they take from him? His life? A chill swept over my skin as I sat straight, my hands clutching the saddle. The idea of Castile dying, of him no longer being there with those frustrating smirks and teasing glances, his quick-witted replies and those damn infuriating dimples, I couldn't even consider it. He was too vivid. Too bright to think of him no longer being there. But he would be gone one day, when this was all over and we parted ways. He would be gone from my life. That was what I wanted, what I planned. Then why did I suddenly feel like crying? We camped out near the road several hours after the sun had set. It was cold, but not nearly as cold as it had been in the Blood Forest. Castile hadn't spoken much beyond offering me food or asking if I needed a break. But as I lay there in the middle of the starless night, he returned to my side, stretching out behind me. I woke in his arms. The next 3 days were just like that. Castile barely spoke. Whatever he felt, and I didn't open myself up to him to truly know, was a shadow colder than the nights. So many times I wanted to ask. I wanted to tell him what I knew about Shay. That I was sorry he'd lost her. I wanted to ask questions about her, about them. I wanted him to do what Alistair had said he hadn't. I wanted him to talk, because I knew his silence fed his anguish. I said nothing, though, telling myself it wasn't my place, that the less I knew, the better. But he came to my side in the night, and he was there when a nightmare found me, waking me before I could give sound to the screams building inside me. He held me in silence, his hand stroking my back until I fell back to sleep. The nightmares, they were different, patchy, as if I were popping in and out of them instead of following the events of the night as before. They didn't make any sense to me either. Not the wounds on my mother, not the screams or the choking smoke, not that creepy voice whispering about bleeding poppies. It was like the nightmares weren't real anymore. That was what I was thinking about as we saddled the horses and traveled the road to Spessa's End on the fourth day. I had no idea how much time had passed when I saw something in the trees to my left. I couldn't make out what it was, and just when I thought I was seeing things, I saw it again, several trees down the road. It hung from a limb, stripped of pine needles and bare of snow. A rope shaped into some kind of symbol. A circle. I twisted in my seat, but I couldn't find where it had been in the mass of trees. The arm around my waist tightened, the first reaction from Castile in days. I could feel the tension in his arm as I scanned the woods. The shape tugged at the recesses of my memory. It looked like something I'd seen before. To the right, I saw it again, a brown rope hanging from another bare limb, fashioned almost like a noose, but with a stick or something crossing through the center. I'd seen something similar in the Blood Forest, except it had been created out of rocks and had reminded me of the Royal Crest. But now I could see this more clearly, I realized it was only like the crest. It wasn't a straight line like an arrow, situated at a slant, but one that was slanted in the opposite direction. And that wasn't a stick bound to the rope. It was too ashen in color, the ends knobby. Oh, gods. It was a bone. Seti slowed, and Castile's arm slid away from me. Slowly, I lifted my gaze, and trepidation took hold. There were dozens of them, hanging amongst the trees, all different, at dizzying heights. Castile, I said quietly, do you see what's in the trees?
Yes.
I saw the same shapes in the Blood Forest.
Cass.
Kieran's voice was low, barely audible.
I know,
he answered, and I heard a quiet snap of a clasp. When his arm came back around me, he held the strange bow in my lap. As close as it was, I could see that the knocked bow was thicker than normal, and although I'd seen the kind of damage the bolt could do, it was still somehow unfathomable. I stared at the bow and the bloodstone arrow. Is it craven? I asked, having seen the rocks right before they arrived. I looked down, seeing no mist.
I don't think craven have started to decorate trees with craft projects, princess, he said,
and my heart gave a stupid little leap. It was the first time he'd called me that in days. He shifted the handle of the bow into my hand.
The lovely decorations are courtesy of the Dead Bones clan.
The what? I turned my head toward his.
They used to live all across Solus, especially where the Blood Forest is now. But they've since relocated to these woods and hills over the past several decades.
I've never heard of them.
There are a lot of things the Ascended don't share with the people of Solus, like the fact that there are people who live and survive outside the protection of the Rise.
How? I demanded.
Many of the villages outfitted with smaller Rises were often overrun by craven. They survive by any means necessary. For this clan, one of those means is by slaughtering anyone they view as a threat. Supposedly they eat who they kill, and will often use the flesh for masks and bones. Well, you already saw what they like to do with the bones. You know what they say. Waste not, want not.
My mouth dropped open.
Yeah, princess. There really aren't any words. We try to avoid them when we pass through here. Normally, we don't have any problems. But in case we do, he folded a hand over mine. Feel this metal piece? It's the trigger. You aim this bow just like you would a normal one, but instead of pulling the string back, you press on this and it fires the arrow. I had so many questions, but I curled my finger around the wooden handle, getting a feel for its weight. Instinct told me that the important thing was to focus on his instructions. Okay. The arrow is knocked the same, except it's held in place. All you need to do is aim and pull the trigger. Bloodstone bolts will also kill mortals, he instructed. You know what to do if we have any problems with these people. Stay alive. I started to respond, but Kieran shouted. No more than a second later, Castile jerked me back against him. The handle of the bow pressed into my stomach as something whizzed mere inches from my face. My head jerked to the right as a branch on the other side of the road snapped in two, taken down by the trees, Nail shouted. To the left! Castile wheeled Seti, guiding the powerful horse around so that I was facing to the right. He shifted in the saddle, his body pressing mine down as flat as I could go. There was another shot, and then Castile was gone from Seti's back, driven to the ground.